You are listening to Podski Wee Wee, a proud member of the Canadian Football Podcast Network.
Welcome to the Canadian Football League, Johnny Manziel. 887 days since he last played serious football. Johnny Manziel takes the snap and throws and completes to Jalen Saunders. Timmis in the backfield, stays into block. Masoli goes in, zone touchdown, Brandon Banks. And Bethel Thompson is going down. For sack, Big Ten Laurent. Williams finds a hole, and he could go. Williams will take it to the house. Touchdown. And there's a spark for the Tiger Cats.
Welcome to Podski Wee Wee. I'm Josh Smith.
Am I Graham?
Mike, we're kicking it old school today. You and I are recording on a Monday afternoon. Haven't done that in a long while. And you're not in Edmonton. You're back in the old stomping grounds of PEI. This is 2015 Podski Wee Wee all over again.
It really is, Josh. I mean, I'm here in beautiful PEI. It's a little cold right now, but nonetheless, it's still a beautiful place. And let me tell you a little story. I got on my plane, in my connecting plane in Toronto, and guess what kind of plane it was? Your favorite movie of all time, bud. A Frozen-themed plane.
A what?
Disney
Why?
Frozen. I don't know. I have no idea. Apparently, it's their only one. It was a promotional thing, and it's still kicking around. So, yeah, I was a very special princess on that day getting on that plane.
Oh, man. Am I going to be riding some stupid Frozen plane when I come out to Edmonton in a few months to go to Grey Cup?
If you're lucky, Josh.
Yeah, that's not the – I wouldn't use the word lucky. But I was lucky this week, Mike. I've been all over the place the last week talking Ticats football. I did a guest spot on the Argo Fancast, a show that you have done. They finally had me on. We finally made the schedules work. I was able to go on there and talk about the Ticats. I did another guest spot on a podcast that one of our loyal listeners, Adam Young, puts out. It's called Three Ghosts, No Wait, Four. He had me on there to talk about the Ticats. Did a whole two episodes of CFL preview from – you got a fan or podcaster from almost every team kind of previewing each team for the CFL this season. Then I did
it. Is that a fully CFL podcast?
I don't think so. I think it's like just general sort of Southern Ontario talk. Like he's based out of Welland, and if you look at it's on iTunes. You can go there. I think there's 7 or 8 episodes up, and you can see it's kind of talking about like the community and things that are going on there and stuff like that. So it's not a full CFL podcast. It's just he's a CFL fan, big listener of ours, big fan of ours. Want to talk about CFL football, and when someone asks me to talk football, I go on there, buddy.
Awesome.
Then I did a guest co-host gig. I was on for the entire Rouge, White, and Blue podcast last week with our friend Joe Pritchard and Dr. Rouge. Man, getting to sit down and talk to those guys. We spent about an hour just chit-chatting everything CFL. That was a lot of fun, so go check them out. And then to cap it all off, Mike, and I'm not trying to pat myself on the back or say anything here, I was on the Fan 590 in Toronto on Saturday afternoon talking Johnny Manziel. That was a lot of fun. Kind of came out of the blue, wasn't expecting it, got hit with a message. Hey, do you want to come on and talk Johnny Manziel? Like I said, I get the opportunity to talk football. I'm going to do it. So it's been a busy week for me talking Ticats football, but this is the main event here. This is the A show. This is the greatest podcast in the history of the
world. Of all time.
Me and you sitting down talking some Ticats football together. And, dude, we have an actual game to discuss, although – It was not a very good one. Our Hamilton Tiger Cats lost badly, 36-18, to the Argos on Friday night. It was an ugly, ugly game. But before we get to that, sir, I want to talk to you about the promo that aired during the Montreal Alouettes Ottawa Redblacks game the night before. I'm sure you saw it. I know you're on Twitter. I'm pretty sure you're watching the game. If not, I'm sure you've still seen the image. People were pissed that TSN would promote Johnny Manziel playing in this game. You probably saw it. Ticats, Argos, Ricky Ray on one side, Johnny Manziel on the other. But, man, were people angry that they would – how dare they put Johnny Manziel? They're disrespecting Jeremiah Mazzoli. And I'm seeing all these people go off on this. And I don't know how you feel. I'm obviously curious to get your opinion. But I'm sitting here going, guys, TSN is trying to get eyeballs on their product. This is the one game they're going to play where Johnny Manziel is guaranteed to get into the lineup. He's going to be on the field. We know that for sure. Why the heck? They'd be idiots not to promote it. But, man, were people pissed off. How did you feel?
I didn't feel anything, Josh, because I did not see that game. I was at work, unfortunately.
Oh, you bum. How dare you have a job?
I know. But, listen, it's a preseason game, man. I mean, the ratings aren't going to be through the roof. They're promoting Johnny, and I guarantee you look at the ratings, and that game will beat out anything that TSN covers in the preseason by far. I guarantee it.
There was talk, and it has been confirmed, but there was chatter on Friday that TSN was considering finding a way to put Hamilton's next preseason game against Montreal that's coming up this Saturday on TSN simply because Manziel was in there, because they know he's a ratings getter. And that's for – hey, the promo had Manziel on one side, Ricky Ray on the other. Shouldn't you be more pissed off they're promoting Ricky Ray? He didn't even dress for the game. So you're not going to see Ricky Ray. At least you're going to see Johnny Manziel.
Yeah, it would have been more appropriate to have James Franklin up there, considering they're, you know, I think they played each other in college one time, and James Franklin upset Manziel's Texas A&M team. So that would have been more appropriate to have Manziel and Franklin as the promotional tools.
Yeah, it just seemed like any time Johnny Manziel is brought up, it seems to just elicit anger.
People explode. Yeah, they explode.
And it's coming from every other fan base, and I get it. I'm sure if he was with the Argos or with the Red Blacks or with the Stampeders, I'd probably get sick of hearing about him too. But people need to relax. It is TSN promoting a game in which Johnny Manziel is going to play. They want eyeballs. You said it yourself. This is going to be, I guarantee you, I agree with you 100%, this is going to be the highest rated preseason game maybe TSN has ever showed, simply because Johnny Manziel was going to play in this game. They would be derelict in their duty if they did not promote the fact that he was going to play. They'd be complete buffoons to just ignore it and say, oh, we'll throw Jeremiah Mazzoli up there, which is fine, but that'll happen in the regular season. And I want to watch these promos and these things throughout the season, because I've noticed over the years that some of the people they decide to put in these things, it's like, well, that's kind of a weird decision to put. I wonder why they put him up there. Right. So I want to see if people get ticked off 6 weeks from now when they show a preview of a Stampeders Rough Riders game, and, like, I don't know, Chad Owens is featured. He's not playing. You know what I mean? Like, people will
Who?
Get – exactly. People are going to get – not going to get ticked off at that. They're not even going to think about it. But because it's Johnny Manziel, it just engenders this vitriolic hatred of how dare they do this. And it's like, guys – come on, man. They're in the business of making money, and this is how they're going to make money. You can't really fault them for that.
No, it brings in the fans that don't usually watch the CFL. I mean, I was watching that game, and they showed in the crowd the Johnny Manziel fans that were obviously not regular Ticat fans, just showed up to see Johnny Manziel, probably make fun of the CFL otherwise. So you're going to get those douchebags that show up to games now with their Cleveland Browns jerseys or their NFL jerseys on. But, you know, that's what they want. They want eyeballs on the product that don't usually watch, and it's going to work. I mean, people are attracted to Johnny Manziel. He's a big story.
How many American sports shows have we – you linked to it on your Twitter account maybe a week or two ago. Chris Carter talking about the CFL and spending like 6 or 7 minutes on his – show on, right. I think it's on FS1, talking about the CFL, talking about Johnny Manziel. The co-host said, like, I don't know anything about the CFL, but I learned some stuff about it. Like, people are going to come to this game, and I've had this argument with people, and I'm curious to get your take on it. If you're going to get an extra 200, 300, 400,000 people in the U.S. watching simply because Johnny Manziel's here, yeah, he might leave in a couple years. Maybe half of those people or a quarter of those people stay. That's another 100,000, 200,000 eyeballs. And I'm being conservative in my estimate here, that are now CFL fans. Growing the game is vital to keeping this to making the CFL bigger, to keeping it what it is, whatever have you. I just think TSN promoting him, just it. Of course they would. Like I just can't understand why people are so ticked about this.
It's a good thing that the American shows are talking about it. You know, I did do a link on Twitter to the Chris Carter segment, and Chris Carter's had some really good things to say about the CFL. I've had the argument with people for years and years. They say that, oh, you know, Alabama or a really good NCAA team could beat a CFL team easily. And that's just not true, okay? These guys are professionals. They're not kids. The players in the NCAA are extremely talented, and actually a very small fraction of them will make the NFL. But they're not beating CFL teams. These are grown-ass men who are professionals. And, it's nice to see a football Hall of Famer like Chris Carter speak so highly of the CFL and say that, hey, these guys are a better level of football than NCAA.
Okay, but let's move on to the game now, Mike. Level of football than anything was the Tiger Cats' performance on Friday night. But here's the weird thing about it. You look at the stat sheet, and this is one of those classic cases of the numbers not telling the whole story, because the Tiger Cats owned the stat sheet in this one. The Argos, 251 yards of offense. Hamilton, 405. The Tiger Cats rushed for 140 yards on 23 carries for a 6.1 yard average. The Argos, 76 yards on 23 carries for a 3.3 yards per carry average. The Tiger Cats won the time of possession battle. If you look at the stat sheet, you're going, man, how did the Tiger Cats lose this game by double digits? And then the one big thing stands out, and that is turnovers. 10 turnovers, 7 of which came in the first half. UGLY, you ain't got no alibi. That was ugly.
Extremely ugly. I love me some football, but it would be nice if we could get a longer training camp in the CFL, you know, get these guys more prepared for these preseason games, because that was just not enjoyable to watch at all. I did not enjoy watching this game. You know, I was interested, obviously, in seeing the players, the Mazzoli play and everybody play, but just the product on the field was just garbage. And, you know, that's what you expect. It's preseason football. It will get better, obviously, but, it'd just be nice to get a longer training camp so these guys can get more reps before they actually play a game.
Yeah, maybe do 2 weeks of camp before the first game instead of one, or 3 weeks of camp. I don't know. We got 1 week left of training camp and one more preseason game, and then we're talking regular season ball. The next time you and I sit down, Mike, we're going to be doing our season preview, and we're going to be talking about predictions and stuff. It comes at you fast, and I don't know if you can blame it entirely on the shorter training camp, because it was like, I don't know any amount of time in practice is going to stop Nikita Whitlock from fumbling those balls. You know what I mean? I don't know if any extra time is going to stop Mazzoli from throwing those interceptions. I just, I agree with you in your general sentiment of maybe a longer training camp would be better. I'm not sure if in this game, with the mistakes that the players made, if that would have really made a difference. Right. Maybe it would have, and I'm wrong. But man, it was sloppy. It was a sloppy game.
Yes, yeah, and you see it in the first week of the season too, like in years past, that the football just isn't up to the level it should be early in the season, and then progressively it gets better, obviously. But yeah, I mean, it would be nice to have even like a month of training camp, like something that like the NFL has, maybe a little bit shorter. But anyways, that's a different story. We'll move on and talk about the game a little bit.
Yeah, let's talk about the offense. And this, to me, is kind of the story of the game, right? Because they turned the ball over so much, I think we're going to focus more of our review of this on the offense. And of course, let's start with the quarterback, because that's what everyone wants to talk about. Jeremiah Mazzoli started the game. June Jones wanted him in there for maybe a couple series, ended up being in there for almost the entire first half. He goes 8 of 13 for 115 yards, a touchdown, 2 interceptions, and he had 1 rush for 9 yards. How would you judge Mazzoli's performance in this game? I think it's fair to say subpar.
I thought it was pretty poor until that last drive, and you knew that Jones was going to keep him in there until he saw, you know, success, saw a good sustained drive from Mazzoli. And it took a while. It did take a while, but that last drive got my confidence back up in Mazzoli, because he really ran the offense well.
Yeah, and I think some of it is not Mazzoli's doing. Nikita Whitlock has 2 fumbles on 3 carries that kill drives. I don't think the Ticats ran more than maybe 3 plays on either of those drives where Whitlock fumbled. So that hurts Mazzoli's opportunity to show some more. Maybe he gets that touchdown drive in at the end of the first quarter, as opposed to near the end of the second quarter, if Whitlock doesn't fumble the football. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm, they go for it on third down in one instance. I think it was 3rd and 2, 3rd and 1. They threw like a 25, 30 yard pass downfield. You're not going to see that in the regular season. So that's a punt, or as you like to say, a plop to get the first down. That drive continues. I agree with you. It was a poor performance from Mazzoli, but I think he redeemed himself. And as I wrote my piece for Three Down after the game, we saw him protect the football last year. 4 interceptions over 10 starts, 5 on the season. His 3-1 touchdown interception ratio. The only quarterback better in the league was Matt Nichols last year. So I'm not overly concerned with the interceptions as much as I'm concerned with the fumbles from Whitlock. That can simply not happen going forward. And this is why I am glad he's probably not going to be the starting running back. I think it's fairly obvious he won't be the starting running back. But those fumbles, that really hurt. That this offense kind of getting momentum when the starters were on the field.
Yeah, it was disappointing because there's quite a bit of hype around this Whitlock kid, a two-way player. And as soon as he gets the ball, he fumbles it twice. So yeah, that can be corrected, though. The ball security can be worked on. And perhaps we'll see him in the backfield. I don't think he's going to be the starter, but in certain situations, you'll probably see him back there.
I'm a little nervous, though, now about the idea of, we talked about it, him being a short yardage back. If he hits the pile and loses the football, I don't know if I really want to see him in there on, third and goal from the one and handing him the ball, or second and goal from the one, because I'm a little nervous that if a helmet hit, I don't know, man. I'm a little nervous now.
It is a bit nerve-wracking now that you see, because it wasn't like he took these huge jolting hits or anything. The ball just kind of popped out on both occasions. So, yeah, but like I said, that can be worked on. Mm-hmm. Ball security can be worked on, and it can get better. And if he does improve that, I mean, this guy's a beast. He can make those short yardage runs. And, I was excited when he first touched the ball, because he's just a big dude that can rumble. And I think he will be a very good short yardage running back if he works on that.
Well, and the thing was, the first run he gets, I think it was he fumbled the ball, but he draw play. I think he picked up 8 yards, and it's like, okay, I can kind of get into this. And it's like, oh, the ball's on the turf. It's like, okay. First time in a while he's taking the ball in a game. Fine. Then it happens again, and I'm like, okay, gritted teeth. Okay. Yeah. But the thing was, is he shows the elusiveness for such a big guy. It was there on that draw play. So it's I can see why the team wants that. But yeah, the ball security issues, that has to get handled. And I hope he gets an opportunity against Montreal this upcoming week to tote the rock a little bit more and not fumble the football. And then we can kind of wash this game away.
Absolutely. And then speaking of other running backs that really impressed me, actually, there was two, but we'll talk about Mercer Timmis first. Really good game from him. He looks like he's gained quite a bit of confidence from year one to year two. Or was he a rookie last year, or was it his second year?
I think it was his second year, but he missed most of it with an injury.
Right, so year two to year three. I mean, this guy looks better. He does look better. I know it's preseason competition, but 10 carries, 56 yards, a long of 18 yards. So, yeah, what did you think of Mr. Timmis?
Man, that 18-yard run you're talking about, he bullied his way down the field. Stiff-arming dude.
Yeah, stiff-arm, yeah.
That was an awesome run. Did he not remind you a little bit of Jesse Lumsden?
He did. He's not quite as big in stature, I don't think.
And probably not as fast.
Yes, and I don't think he runs. Lumsden was, he didn't run low. He ran high, what I mean?
Yeah, kind of like John Cornish-like. It seems these Canadian running backs all kind of run with their pad level really high. I saw a bit of that in Mercer in this game, and I was just watching him. I think it was on this 18-yard run, Mike. I saw him, and I'm just like, man, that reminds me of 2007 Jesse Lumsden bowling over some defenders. And it's if this guy can stay healthy, this as your top running back when Alex Green comes out, I could see this. I could see this really working.
Yeah, it would be great for the ratio. I mean, and, he's a local kid. He could be a huge star for the Ticats. I was really happy to see his performance. And then we got to talk about my boy.
Well, I want to do one more thing on Timmis, just because you brought it up. You brought up the ratio. You brought up the ratio, yep. And that's a great – so say the team wants to start two Canadian receivers, as we've heard they are, and we'll talk about the Shamad Chambers injury and what that could deal with the ratio there. But say – so you have Alex Green in the backfield to start. You got two Canadians, three Americans. We've been talking about which one of the big four that the Ticats have of Tolliver, Tasker, Banks, and Saunders is going to sit. You bring in Mercer Timmis to spell Alex Green – you can bring one of those receivers in. That's a pretty exciting offense as I sit here and look at it and think about it right now.
Yeah, and you don't just bring him in to be in there. I mean,
no,
this guy's an actual threat. Yeah, absolutely. So, I mean, this is a really exciting story that might be developing here. The stepping up of Mercer Timmis in this offense.
All right, let's talk about what you were getting to. Your boy Stormy, I thought he had a hell of a game. Unfortunately, it looks like it's probably going to be his only game in black and gold. But let's save that for a second. Let's talk about how he played. Mike, you had to be pretty excited when you saw him get on the field and get the ball. 5 carries, 48 yards rushing. He had a nice run on a draw play after Manziel took a big penalty. Not too shabby. I thought he played really well. I even talked about it in my post game that if Alex Green is going to miss time, the Timmis-Johnson 1-2 combo could be pretty deadly. I stand by that, even though Johnson now is not on the team. But what do you think? You were so high on this guy based only on his name. He kind of had to but then he gets on the field, kind of validates your opinion.
Yeah, and he showed he could play. Now, I believe he got in a little later in the game, and it probably would have been against, third-string players on the Argonauts. But nonetheless, 5 carries for 48 yards, almost a 10-yard average carrying the ball. It's too bad he got cut, but, there's a lot of talent here on this team in the running back position. And, sometimes it's just a numbers game. Maybe we'll see him later on. Maybe another team will pick him up. But overall, I thought it was a pretty good performance. He showed what he could do when he got in there.
We see guys get nicked up and get cut. We saw it with DJ May a couple weeks ago. You never know when these guys could come back around. It could be simply, hey, man, we need this roster spot for Alex Green. Or it could be as simple as you got hurt. He got nicked up in the preseason game. We're going to let you go, but we're going to keep your number in case once you get healthy or in case we have. Like, you never know. You see some of these guys get cut in preseason and then come back 6 weeks later. Alex Green actually is a perfect example of that. He was in camp with the Ticats last year, got cut at the end of training camp because they had C.J. Gable. And then they bring Alex Green back and they trade C.J. Gable. And now Alex Green's the starting running back for the team going into this season. So it's, you never know when these guys are going to come back around. I think he showed enough in this game to warrant a second look. I'm sure his number is still on speed dial on Eric Tillman's phone. So maybe we don't see him in Ticats colors. Maybe, I don't know. But I'm just saying, I wouldn't be surprised if he pops up in the league or he pops up again with Hamilton sometime in the future.
Do you think this is out, like, Alex Green and June Jones have a past of some sort, right? Did he play for Hawaii back in the day?
I believe he did, yes.
Yeah, it's kind of strange, eh? I mean, June Jones wasn't here, but Alex Green was brought in the training camp, and then June Jones comes back. But I think June has a lot of loyalty to his players, and I think that Alex Green will be the guy, even though he's missed quite a bit of training camp. So, he deserved to be, performed really well last year, even when C.J. Gable was here. So, in my opinion, we have a pretty talented running back group.
Oh, I totally agree. We also have some talented receivers on this team, Mike.
Yes.
And I think we saw in this one, Brandon Speedy B. Banks, man, 4 catches, 72 yards and a touchdown. It looks like last year wasn't a fluke. It looks like this guy is full-fledged receiver, and he's going to pick up exactly where he left off last year. This guy looks like he's going to put up numbers, man. It could be a big year for Speedy B.
Yeah, and you just look at the one play where Mazzoli was scrambling around and he checked it downfield to Banks. And that's what he brings to this offense, the deep threat. I mean, no one's going to keep up with Banks. I mean, even though he's starting to get up there in age, he still has that lightning speed. And it's tough to cover him. And if Mazzoli gets some time back there and Banks has time to get open, you better watch out because these guys are going to make some big plays like they did in the first preseason game. A long pass of 45 yards. I mean, it's just exciting to think about the possibilities with these two in this offense. Anything you want to add to Banks' performance?
Well, you mentioned the speed, and the CFL just released a video asking players who's the fastest player in the league, and they all picked Brandon Banks. And it wasn't just Ticats players. It was players from around the league talking about, man, this guy, not only, north-south, but east-west, he's just all fast, and he's fast, and then he turns on the afterburners. Like, he's going to, as he ages, that's going to diminish, but it doesn't look like it's going to diminish in 2018. And I think that could mean big things for Banks. I'm glad you brought up the big pass because I think that that shows the maturation of him as a receiver. I think in the past, he might have been still sprinting downfield. Instead, he knows my quarterback's rolling out this way. I'm going to find – and he's waving his hand. You saw it on the replay. He's waving his hand. He knows he's open, but he sees Mazzoli roll out. He rolls with him and keeps himself open, makes himself available. Mazzoli sees him downfield, throws it on a rope, big catch. If he could have made one man miss, he's probably in the end zone. But he decided, hey, I got hit. You know what? It is a preseason game. I'm sure in a regular season game, he fights for more yards. But it was just a beautiful play, and it just showed what we can expect out of Brandon Banks. And it's going to be really exciting to watch him play receiver in this offense for a full 18 games.
Absolutely. The next best receiver, numbers-wise, was Mr. Altman. 3 receptions, 48 yards, a long of 23. He looked pretty good in this game, too.
Yeah, there wasn't – aside from Banks, I don't think any of the receivers really stood out. Jalen Saunders had a – he tied for the team lead with 4 catches with Banks. We saw a little bit of Luke Tasker. We did see the fumble. I want to say it was Rashad Lawrence that fumbled the ball. I'm really curious – this Shakir Ryan guy, been a lot of talk in – training camp. I feel like I want to see a little bit more of him, but like for the most part, I think we saw what we maybe expected a little bit. Banks make big plays. Altman did step up and looks like he's trying to find, he played a bit on the team last year, trying to find a role. But I think for the most part, outside of Banks, I don't know if there's really anything major to talk about with the receivers, unless you, again, we may have saw different things.
Yeah, there's not much stood out really. I mean, just Banks, Saunders had a decent night, 4 receptions, 42 yards, but nothing really to discuss here.
No, offensive line wise, I think it's the last kind of thing. Now they weren't playing their entire starting lineup. Everton Williams, the Canadian kid from U of T, he was playing right tackle in place of Riker Matthews, so it's kind of difficult to judge the starting, in quotes, offensive line because they weren't starters.
Yeah.
I thought they were okay for the most part. I feel like they were better in run blocking than they maybe were in pass blocking. I think we saw pressure get to Mazzoli and pressure get to Manziel a little bit. And that just reminds me, Mike, I can't believe we did this. We haven't talked about Johnny Manziel's performance.
Right. Oops, forgot about him.
We kept going and going and going, talking with everyone else, and the guy that TSM promoted was going to be playing in the game. We haven't talked about him at all. I think we got to get to talking Johnny football.
Yeah, I think we should touch on it. He was 9 of 11. You know, that's 81%, almost 82%. 80 yards, long of 21. I think he looked pretty good, Josh. Now, the numbers are pretty good. He scrambled around. You know, you saw a little bit of that magic from his college days. Well, what do you think of him?
I thought he was good. I thought they scripted the game plan for him so that he would look this good. Because the one thing in going back and watching the game that I noticed is there were really no throws longer than maybe 10, 15 yards.
Yes.
It was a lot of short throws to the outside, kind of one read and go type situations. And I think that that's smart. It's a preseason game. He doesn't have to make all the throws. But I think this shows you the difference in where Jeremiah Mazzoli is right now and where Johnny Manziel is right now. I do agree that I think Manziel, based on everything we saw, was probably the best quarterback we saw on the field for the Ticats on Friday night. But I think we also saw that they were asking Mazzoli to do a lot more things, and he was able to do a lot more things than Manziel was. So I think you have to take what Manziel did a little bit with a grain of salt.
Yeah, he's definitely not he doesn't know the playbook like Mazzoli does yet. I mean, you look at the numbers and 80 yards on 9 passes, you know, that's not a lot of yards each pass. So, yeah, it would be more exciting, I think, if he does, you know, the playbook is a little bit more wide open for him in the next game against Montreal. Maybe he throws the ball downfield. Maybe we see that arm strength from him. So I think you will see more from Manziel in the second preseason game more than you would in the first.
I hope so too. And there was the one play they ended up, it was a third down. It was after he took what he called the worst call of the century on the intentional grounding call. He's scrambling, and he is like a fingernail away from making a Heisman Trophy Johnny Manziel play, because there was no one in front of him. If he escapes the pressure there and doesn't get tripped up, I don't know if he runs for it. I don't know if he throws it, but we would have seen some Manziel magic on that play. And it's the fact that it was taken away from us kind of pisses me off.
Yeah, the shoelace tackle. I thought he was going to get away even with that. But, he took a spill, and we didn't see it happen. But, you know, it's there. I mean, the guy's still young. He's only 25. He obviously has that speed still. I think you're going to see some of that in the next game.
Yeah, the talent is there. I think what we saw in this game is that he can play in this league, but he still has a long way to go before he'll really get to play in this league.
I think the work ethic is there too.
Yeah,
I think
absolutely.
I think his head's in it. I think he's doing all the right things, and I think he can be a really big success in the CFL. You know, depending on the circumstances, depending on how well Mazzoli plays, all that stuff, but I think he's on the right track to, getting back to where he wants to be.
From a story we didn't want to talk about to one where we're kind of happy with the outcome, I think this is probably based on everything that's happened in the Johnny Manziel saga since, last Labor Day, when it was kind of brought about that he was looking to come up here. I think we've reached best case scenario after his first preseason game, don't you?
I really do. I really do. And you know, everyone's a little tired of the Manziel stuff, and even we were, at a certain point, but he's with the team now, and it gets a little tiring when you see the interviewers, the different media people coming in, but they ask the same questions because they haven't been there yet, and you can see a little bit it's getting tiresome on his face when he answers the same questions over and over and over again, but, I can understand that. I get frustrated with that, too, so, I'm very happy with how Johnny Manziel has been since he's been a Tiger Cat. He's done all the right things. So just keep doing what you're doing, and we'll move forward.
So we spent a ton of time talking about the offense, mostly because if we talk about the defense, I don't really think there's much of anything to talk about. It's really hard for me, and I think I kind of speak for you, to take anything away from how the defense played, because it kept getting put in tight spots because the offense kept turning the damn ball over. So it's like we can't really give a full assessment of how they played. Like, one of my big takeaways from this is Larry Dean looked like he was in midseason form. Like, when he was on the field, he was making plays, making big hits. But really, outside of that, there's not a whole heck of a lot to latch onto here. I guess the big play, like, on defense, like, they had an interception, they had a fumble recovery, they had some sacks. But the big thing to me was that ridiculous touchdown run by the Argos. Yeah. And that was just like, oh, you got to be kidding me. And I'll say this. I'm watching it again. A Ticat player goes down on the play, number 72, goes down and makes like a feint, like throws his shoulder up as Burks is getting around him, and he ends up scoring. I honestly believe if 72 is not hurt on that play, that doesn't go for a touchdown.
Yeah, that's a good observation. That was ridiculous. I mean, someone should have tackled him. There was like 10 Ticats around him, and somehow he got away. It was pretty ugly. I was pretty disappointed in the defense on that play, got to be honest.
Yeah, is there anything else on the defense? Like the secondary was all right. Like, it's really hard to say good or bad. We're kind of in the middle of everything because we didn't really see much.
No, and they were put in so many bad situations with all those turnovers. I mean, how could you blame the defense? Like, if this was a regular season game and there were 10 turnovers, we wouldn't even talk about the defense. It'd be all, the offense. You know?
You're 100% correct.
So, yeah, I don't have much to talk about, to be honest, with the defense. But special teams-wise, if you want to run into that.
Oh, yeah, because there's a lot to talk special teams-wise. That looks like the Ticats have a embarrassment of riches at the return position. They had three guys return punts in this game. The long for one was 74 yards. The long for another was 31 yards. And the long for the third guy was 51 yards. That's it. Yeah. If they're getting those type of returns, even if just once a game, that sets the offense up in good field position. And, of course, one guy, Frankie Williams, took it 74 yards to the house. Can't really ask for much more from your returners, can you?
No. I like that name, Frankie. Frankie Williams. I mean, the special teams would be – if we could get half of this production from the special teams returners in the regular season, we'd be laughing. I mean, it's such a big thing to have when Banks was at his peak returning kicks. I mean, that was a huge help to this whole team. So field position-wise, touchdown-wise, it would be a huge help on offense if we could start in good field position on many of the returns.
When this team was at its peak in 2015, and I hate always having to go back to that, but that's kind of the peak of Ticats football, even though it didn't result in a Grey Cup. They were getting contributions from all three phases of the game. Special teams with Brandon Banks was a huge part of that, with big returns, touchdown returns. If we can get back to getting to winning the field position battle by getting 20, 30, 40-yard returns and then the odd return touchdown, this team can win some football games.
And I mean, Brandon Banks in the return game basically got us to the Grey Cup the one year.
Yep.
The game against Montreal. I mean, that was absolutely ridiculous. He took the team on his shoulders and got us to the Grey Cup. And that's why, you know, no matter what happens, Banks will always have a special place in Ticats' hearts just because of that game alone. If he just played that game, he'd still be remembered for years and years.
Absolutely. Kicking-wise, we saw our new kicker, Liram Hirelahu, had a up-and-down game, missed an extra point early, kind of clanked one off the upright there, shanked a punt, which was like, kind of, again, another area where the defense gets put in a bad spot. I think the Argos scored a touchdown after that drive, or at least kicked a field goal. So it's like another reason why it's really difficult to talk about the defense. But then he nails a 54-yard field goal. And it's like, okay, things. And that one looked like it would have been good from a little bit longer than 55, maybe even 60. Okay, yep. I'm liking this kid.
Yeah, he really redeemed himself with that kick there. I mean, it's good to see that he's got a grasp on the – I don't know if there was any swirling winds in this game. What, was there any wind at all at Tim Horton Field?
It was – the winds there are so weird. It was somewhat windy, I think. I don't think it was, like, super – like, it wasn't, like, gale force winds or anything like we saw in Guelph or earlier years at Tim Horton's Field. But, yeah, there was wind. Like, I think that was probably a little wind-aided, but not much.
Wind or no wind, 54-yard field goal is a 54-yard field goal. And you're right, the – you know, he had an extra 5 yards on that or so. So this guy, this kid has a big leg. And yes, there was a few muffs from him. But, you know, to have a punter and a kicker, the same guy, one guy doing both positions is a great thing. And I think he can do it very effectively.
To have one guy do it and to have him be Canadian helps the team. So let's flush this one, Mike. This it was a bad game. We talked about some good stuff, but overall, the Ticats were sloppy in this one, and I think it's best to be forgotten. All these mistakes that happened, I'm glad they happened this week in the preseason. I don't want to see these things happening in week four when the games actually matter.
Yes, absolutely. It's preseason football is preseason football, and once we get rolling, hopefully all those mistakes go away.
We got to talk news, and unfortunately, that Friday, we got some pretty terrible news as Ticat fans. Shamad Chambers, done for the year with a torn ACL. I remember when we traded, and again, like with Andrew Harris, how much you hated him, and with Shamad Chambers, these are the two of the things that I will always remember us talking about. You weren't high on Shamad Chambers because you thought he had underperformed a bit, rightfully so, with the Eskimos and with the Rough Riders. Came here. And then you kind of change your tune because he played pretty well for the Ticats down the stretch after he was traded here from Edmonton last year. To see him go down, it's like kind of a bummer because what could he have done with a full season, a training camp, all that in the offseason? But now it brings up ratio questions with this team. We all thought, or at least they've talked about, wanting to start two Canadians. If Shamad Chambers can't play, I think that puts a real dent in that plan, especially because Mark Chapman still has not signed.
Yeah, I really do feel bad for Shamad. You know, this could have been his year to, you know, live up to his potential because, you know, there's a ton of talent there. He's a good receiver, and he showed that in the last couple of games with the Tiger Cats. It's just it's heartbreaking that he's out for the season. And team-wise, it does put a monkey wrench, you know, into the ratio. You know, what are they going to do? Who are they going to I mean, they're pretty thin at experienced Canadian receivers now.
Yeah, they got Felix Faubert-Lucier. They have Jacob Scarfone, who I know they've talked about highly, but do you really put an untested? They still have Mike Jones.
Mike Jones.
Who? Mike Jones. There you go. but it's like, which of those guys do you You have to start two of them. And now, okay, Chambers is gone. That eats into the depth as well. Now, I don't think the Ticats have to start two Canadian receivers. Like, that's the thing about it. We know they have the three offensive linemen. We know that they have Ted Laurent. We know that they have Justin Capicotti. We know that they have Courtney Stephen. And if you start one Canadian, Mike Jones, Lucier, Scarfone, whomever it may be, there's your seven. We know Mercer Timmis can play. So, or at least we assume he can play based on what we saw in a preseason game. But it's like, I don't think the Ticats have to start two Canadian receivers. And I don't really understand why the team, and in June Jones, is so gung-ho or so like steadfast in starting two Canadian. I don't see the need. Even with Chambers out, throw Mike Jones in there, throw one of those other guys in there. You still have your seven. It's kind of boggled my mind ever since this came out. Like, why do we have to start two?
It doesn't make sense to me either, Josh. I mean, we have four international receivers that could light it up. If you can get those four guys on the field, get them on the field and have the one Canadian out there. Whether it be, like you said, whether it be Mike Jones or whoever, they're not going to get a lot of balls thrown to them where they are, the position on the field. I know Chambers had his chance to catch some balls last year, and that's all well and good. But if you can get those four receivers on the field, Jalen Saunders, Brandon Banks, Tolliver, Tasker, that is a group of four that you want to be playing as much as possible, right?
Well, that's putting the best unit on the field. And you always hear, quote, we want to put the best guys on the field. And yes, in the CFL with the ratio, you do have to sometimes – I'm sure that there's an American receiver, and this is no slight against any of the Canadian receivers on this team. There's probably an American receiver who is going to get cut who you will probably say is more talented than the Canadian kid. But that's just the way it goes. So even with the ratio rules the way they are, I just outlined it. Like, they don't need to start two. Now, Tolliver's just got back to training camp, just practicing for the first time today and yesterday. So I get maybe they're going to ease him back. Maybe he spends a couple of weeks on the injured list before they really want him to get any game action. But that said, I hate repeating myself so many times. I just don't understand where the need is with this team to start two Canadian receivers. I just don't get it.
And there's plenty of options ratio-wise. Like we talked about it earlier. Even in the secondary. I mean, if you really wanted, you could put Daly at safety and put Steven at cornerback.
Mm-hmm.
I know. I don't think that they're going to do that. That's more of a me thing than a June Jones thing. But the option is there, right? So there's a lot of – I mean, there's a lot of options ratio-wise on this team right now, and it's a very good thing.
They've talked about Jackson Bennett, the second-round pick of this team. He's been working at Sam linebacker. Now, he was injured and didn't play in this last game, but he's been getting some work there. Maybe that's an option. Now, throwing a rookie in there, I don't know. You don't really see a ton of Canadians playing that position. Maybe they're better suited for it, and we just don't think of it. Throwing a rookie in the starting lineup is always an iffy proposition, but again, this team is not lacking for depth Canadians. This team is not, like, they have their starters, I think. I don't see the, again, like I keep saying, I hate repeating myself, just don't see the need. There's other options. You brought up one in the secondary. You can start Ted Laurent and Justin Vaughn on the defensive line. Like, I feel like this team could, if they wanted to, maybe start eight, even nine Canadians if you throw Mercer Timmis in the backfield. I just don't see the need to start two Canadian receivers. And they went out and signed another Canadian receiver once Chambers got hurt, and McMaster's Mitch O'Connor. So this, again, so he's going to be a rookie. He's coming into camp. He's a week behind, but he's going to be here. But this, again, tells me, okay, they're looking for Canadian receivers. They seem to be pretty stuck in, we're going to start two Canadians.
Yeah, I don't get it. I think you're doing a disservice to the offense if you don't try and get those four receivers out there. Now, I know that Tolliver is coming off an injury, like you said, and he just started practicing. But once this guy gets fully healed, he's a serious talent, and we know this. So to not have him on the field, I think, is a big mistake.
I completely agree. Speaking of more roster moves, we talked about they signed O'Connor, likely to replace Chambers, maybe not in the starting lineup, but as a body at camp. They made a couple of releases, and we kind of touched on a little bit earlier. Your boy, Stormy Johnson, is no longer with the team. They also released fellow international wide receiver Harvey Binford. So two guys out. Alex Green came back to camp this morning on Monday. probably explains why Johnson was let go. Still, after his performance and after how much you were like, this is my guy, kind of a bummer to see him go.
It is a bit of a bummer, but, you know, that's just the way it goes in football. I was kind of on people for getting too attached to players that actually played for the Ticats, so I can't really get too upset about a player that was just in training camp.
That's why you don't buy jerseys in training camp.
Yeah.
But, yeah, it was a shame to see. I like I said, on three down,
you look good, though.
Thought they could be a one. Him and Timmons could be a 1-2 combo if Green doesn't come back. But Green is back in camp. And I think what we saw last year with him, I'm really excited to see what he could do in a full season. And the thing with the Ticats, and we didn't really touch on this in the game preview, they ran the ball 23 times against the Argos. That's a commitment to the running game we haven't seen on this team since, what, maybe Avon Coburn was the lead back, maybe even DeAndre Cobb. Like, it's been a long time since we've seen, like, the entire Ken Austin era, with the exception of C.J. Gable's rookie year, this team did not like to run the football. We're seeing kind of a return to that. That excites me because I think it adds a better dynamic to the offense. We saw what Alex Green could do last year. We know that they're going to run the football. That makes me smile a little bit. Even if he just gets 15 carries or 15 touches a game, I think it adds a dimension to the offense that we have not seen in close to, what, a decade?
And a lot of people were worried that not running the football would continue under June Jones because of his run and shoot offense. You know, it's a pretty pass happy offense, but he adjusts. He realized that, hey, we can't just throw the ball a million times. We have to run the ball, and we have to run the ball effectively. And that's what they did last year. And that's a big part of why this offense was successful after June Jones came in and took over. So to have that mixture of running the ball and passing the ball is a big thing. And, you know, Ken Austin did a lot of good things for this team, but that was not one of them. You know, I think the defense has just figured it out. Hey, you don't have to worry about the run against these guys. They're going to throw it every down. They might run the ball once at the start of the game and go, oh, that didn't work, so let's pass the ball a million times. So to have him in there and to have the threat of a running game is huge for this team.
I could not agree more. Mike, we've talked a lot about on-field stuff. We've been, I wouldn't say we've been overly negative, but I think we've been more negative than positive on this week's show. So let's talk about something positive, but we got to talk about it off the field. We won't spend too much time on it simply because we've talked about it before, but a couple weeks ago we heard word that the stadium lawsuit was going to be settled. It was just a matter of it being official. And then last week we got word it is official. The lawsuit between the Ticats and the city of Hamilton and the province of Ontario and all the other stakeholders in this is officially settled. Now we can march on towards what, Mike? A Grey Cup coming to the city of Hamilton. Man, we mentioned it a few weeks ago that it felt like finally this was going to be behind us. Now it's officially behind us. How do you feel about this?
I feel great about it. It's finally over. The Tiger Cats can move on and you know, really reach their potential as a franchise, I believe. You know, bringing a Grey Cup to the city would be huge. They could make a lot of money. The city will make a lot of money. I just can't say enough good things about it. It's finally friggin' over.
We were all happy about this, and then someone decided to crap in our punch bowl, and this would be longtime Edmonton journalist Terry Jones commented about Hamilton getting a Grey Cup in 2020, and he tweeted to Rick Zamperin of AM900 CHML, former voice of the Ticats before they moved to TSN 1150, and he said, I don't think Hamilton would really want to follow this Edmonton 2018 act and the one next year that Calgary 2019 will then try to top. Sorry. What the hell does this even mean, man? Like, so because Edmonton and Calgary are going to put on great parties, so should no one try to follow? Like,
No, it's Edmonton, Calgary. We'll just do a rotation. Edmonton, Calgary.
Or should we just get rid of the Grey Cup altogether after 2019? Just don't have it because you're never going to top it, so forget it.
No, throw it in the garbage. End the league. You know, it's over. I mean, we've reached our peak, Josh.
It's the dumbest thing I've ever heard.
Yeah, it is pretty dumb.
You're going to have to follow somebody. And it's like, I had people, when this came out, I was like, oh, great. You know, we can finally show off the city of Hamilton. And we talked about it on the show, and I had trolls hit me up on Twitter being like, Hamilton's a crap hole. It sucks. They'll never be able to top what Ottawa did. It's like, it's not about topping what another city did. Every city brings something different to this experience. And yes, there are some better than others. But just because they might not be able to, well, look what Edmonton did, and look what Calgary did, and look what Ottawa did, they'll never be able to. doesn't mean he can't try. Yes, I believe we should lower expectations for a Hamilton Grey Cup simply because it's been so goddamn long since we had one. But that doesn't mean that they shouldn't attempt to bid on one. Like, I just... I see these things and I'm like, what is your mind thinking on stuff like this? You know what I mean?
Right. Yeah. It reminds me of a couple of years ago, they had a soccer event. I believe it was the Women's World Cup, something to do with women's soccer in Edmonton. You know, sold out stadium. And then some jackass from Toronto, reporter Kelly, I believe.
Oh, yeah. Cathal Kelly. I remember that. Yep.
Yeah, he said, you know, this is Bush League. It should be in Toronto and all this stuff. It reminds me of that, but reverse, you know, snobbiness from the West Coast. I mean, Hamilton could do a great job. And why can't they take things and learn from the Calgary and Edmonton Grey Cups and take some of those things and then make them, you know, the Grey Cups can be great wherever it is, as far as I'm concerned. And, you know, Edmonton and Calgary are going to put on a great show, but I think Hamilton will as well. I think Bob Young and Scott Mitchell and all those guys in the front office are very smart dudes, and they will put on a great show, a great party in Hamilton whenever it comes to Hamilton.
Yeah, whether it's 2020 or 2021 or 2022, Hamilton's going to get a Grey Cup. It's going to have to follow someone, and whether it beats expectations of the year before or doesn't, you're going to have to do it sooner or later, and it just doesn't make any sense why you would be like, well, they can't follow this. It's going to be too good. That's just stupid. That's just stupid thinking on anyone's part, let alone someone like Terry Jones, who has been covering the CFL for like 500 years. He should know better than to say something like that. And that's not a crack at age. He's a well-respected journalist. Journalists in the journalism community like him, but like that's just a stupid comment to make. If Rod Peterson made a comment like that, we'd crush him for it. So we're crushing Terry Jones for it too. It's just stupid.
Yeah, it is stupid. He's showing his little bit of homerism there for Edmonton, and you know, I'm looking very forward to the Edmonton Grey Cup this year, as I'm sure you are.
Oh, of course, we're gonna hang out. We're gonna have a great week. Time.
Yeah, and it doesn't matter where it is. Like, it's going to be a great show. Like, if it's in Toronto, I understand that it won't get the publicity that it would get if it was in Hamilton or Ottawa or at West. But even Toronto, you'd have a great time in Toronto at a Grey Cup. I haven't been to a Toronto Grey Cup since, it's been a long time, 2000s, somewhere in there. But, you know, I had a ton of fun in Toronto.
Was it the 27 Winnipeg, Saskatchewan
Grey Cup? Saskatchewan, yes, that's the one. Not the greatest Grey Cup game, not the greatest Grey Cup festival, but it was good, and I had a great time. I don't care where it is, you'll have a great time no matter what.
I went to the one in 2012, and I didn't do all like the festival stuff or everything, but all I heard was how much of a success it was. And 2016 was a bit of a blunder, but I think that there's a lot of reasons you can chalk that up to it. I don't know. I don't see Hamilton making the same mistakes. I see them taking their time and getting this right.
Yep.
And I think it's going to be fun to host the entire country in my city and get to show people around what Hamilton in 2020 or 2021 or whatever actually looks like, so we can get rid of these idiotic opinions that Hamilton is something that it's not anymore.
Yeah, and to throw shade from Edmonton, like, no offense to Edmonton. I like the city. I like living in the city, but it's no better than Hamilton. You know, it's like, you know, there's rough spots in every city. It's ridiculous.
Okay, Mike, enough off-field stuff. I know it was only the one thing, but let's talk on-field again. Second week in a row, we get to preview a game. It's the second and, thankfully, last game that does not matter in the standings. The Ticats are traveling to Montreal to take on the Alouettes in a preseason tilt. As far as the game is concerned, Mike, what are you looking forward to see in this one? No turnovers, right? That's the big one. No, zero turnovers on the stat sheet.
Yes, or at least less than 10.
Less than what Montreal turns the ball over. I want to win the turnover battle.
Yes. you know, there's some things that I'm looking at. Obviously, the quarterbacks. I want to see Mazzoli have a little better performance. I know that, you know, it wasn't all his fault, obviously, but he had two picks, and it took him a little while to get the offense going. So I'd like to see him to get on the field and run a drive, you know, first drive of the game, and just go down the field. Let's see what you got. Manziel, obviously, I want to see a little bit more from him, you know, throwing the ball down the field a little bit more. The running backs is interesting. I want to see Whitlock hold on to that ball. I want to see him get the ball, though, and I want to see him improve from what happened last week. And Alex Green, he hasn't been around. I was kind of questioning his commitment. Now there's, you know, I don't know what happened with his family, and that's probably a serious situation, but you'd like to have the player around all the time, you know, going through training camp, all that stuff. So for me, offense wise, I'm looking at the quarterbacks and I'm looking at the running backs.
I'm also looking same area. I want to see what Vernon Adams can do. This was a big offseason acquisition, going back to Montreal where he had some success, was 3-0 as a starter there. And I know we here on the show don't take much stock into quarterback wins, but he did go out there. He did do something that most Alouettes quarterbacks the last 5 or so years haven't been able to do. That's win some football games. I'm curious to see what he looks like in this offense. You touched on Johnny Manziel. Mercer Timmis, man. I want to see if he can build off what he did against the Argos. I would like to see him get in there against maybe some of the more starting caliber Alouettes defense, because that Alouettes defense, we mock the Alouettes and we don't think they're going to be very good. That defense is no joke. They got some talented players in there. I'd like to see what Timmis can do with the ball in his hands against maybe some starters. I'm also looking forward to seeing the actual real starting offensive line. Riker Matthews is back at practice. He's healthy. I want to see my boy. I want to see what they can do, that five-man unit. I want to see what they can accomplish together. We saw 4/5 of what we think the starters are going to be. I want to see what all five can do. See if that makes a difference in pass protection. I hope Johnny Manziel gets some time behind the actual starting offensive line, because he did get some playing time with the starters in the last game. I want to see what he can do with the starters in this game as well. So offensively, we're kind of looking at the same things. We didn't mention receivers pretty much because I think we know what to expect from them. So not much to talk about there.
Unless some Canadian receiver stands out, right?
Absolutely.
That'd be a good thing to see.
I want to see hopefully this O'Connor kid from Mac maybe gets some playing time, maybe shows why they brought him in. Defensively, if you don't mind moving over there, pretty much for me, it's the same as last week. I want to look at the Sam linebacker position. No one really stood out at that position this last game. Again, like we said, really hard to judge because of the poor position they were put in by the offense. I want to see the secondary. I want to see if they continue to gel. Again, because we didn't get – I think I'm going to look at the defense more in this one simply because – like as a whole unit. And I'm hoping this game's on TSN. If not, I guess we won't really see it. We'll hear it on, I guess, TSN 1150. I'll have to listen to it on the radio. But if we get a chance to actually see this game, I want to see kind of like what they can do when they're given an opportunity after the Ticats score a touchdown and the Alouettes get the ball. What do they do then? That's kind of what I'm looking for, kind of like the whole unit in and of itself, to actually see them put in situations that they're probably going to be put in a regular season game. Because let's be honest, the chances of the Ticats turning over the ball 10 times in a game in a regular season is slim to none. You just don't see that happen very often. I think June Jones even said during his press scrum, we turned the ball over more in that one game than they turned over in the 10 games he coached last year. So chances are we're not seeing 10 turnovers again. So let's see what the defense can do when they're put in positions that we're actually going to see them in come the regular season.
Yeah, and I saw American tweeting, watching the game. He's like, this is supposed to be professional football. Like, dude, it's preseason.
NFL preseason
is
awful.
Too. Yeah, awful. So let's not get carried away. I mean, people judge things so quickly. I mean, if it's not perfection in, the first 10 minutes, then they're out of there. But anyways, yeah, I'm looking at the same things you are pretty much. I want to see that linebacker position, you know, someone step up and take that, because it's important that they have the starter in there. I don't want to see a lot of rotation like we've seen in the past in the secondary and the linebackers, all that stuff. So I'm just I don't have much to add to what you said, because that's exactly what I'm looking at, too.
It's funny. Did you read Steve Milton's piece before we go? Speaking of the Sam linebackers, pardon me, I can speak today. Speaking of the Sam linebacker position, Steve Milton wrote a piece for 3Down talking about how there really hasn't been anyone to fill the role since Eric Harris left. And they were talking to Don Unamba, who actually played some Sam in this game against the Argos. And he said that he's been looking to play that position since he got to the league, because he feels like he's suited for that spot. So maybe that's a guy who will bump down from the secondary, who was a pretty good corner for the team last year. Bumps down to the secondary, maybe pulls a Markeith Knowlton, because Knowlton was a secondary guy that they moved to that position and excelled for all those years with the Ticats. Maybe Unamba is another one of those guys who can come down and make some plays at Sam. And again, we're going to have to wait and see. I think I believe it's Mario Cooper is like the leader, he's the front runner right now to get that position. But we didn't see him in this last game because he was hurt. I think he's back at practice this week. So we're going to see the guy in this game that they like. Let's see what he can do.
Yeah, let's see what Cooper can do, and if Yuamba can get in there too, maybe, you know, take a look at him in that position, because you know that there's a lot of covering in the Sam linebacker spot. So yeah, it's going to be interesting to see who stands out and who grabs that spot. Who's the starting linebacker the first game of the season?
And that first game of the season is coming fast. The next time you and I sit down in a week's time, Mike, you'll be back in Edmonton, so we won't be kicking it old school anymore, but we will be talking about the actual start of the season. The Ticats will open their season that weekend against the Stampeders. We'll be doing our season preview show. We probably got a pretty big, probably a pretty long episode for you guys next week. So get ready for maybe a double-sized Podski Wee Wee next week.
Yeah, as we get to
kick off and preview the CFL season. But until then, that has been Podski Wee Wee for this week. Episode 110, Mike. Just keep doing it. Keep doing it every week. If you want to listen to the show, find it over on Apple Podcasts or anywhere else you can get your podcasts. 3downnation.com obviously has it. Hit us up on those social media pages at PodskiWeeWee. Mike was tweeting from our Twitter account during the game, had some good stuff. I sent out a few pictures from our Instagram account. So hit us up on both those. You can find them both at PodskiWeeWee. And of course, you can always find us on our personal accounts. Mike, where can they find you, good sir?
Mike_Ticats.
And of course, you can find me, JoshSmith_82. And of course, the comment section of 3Down Nation is open for anyone to ask us questions, give us comments and feedback. We always like hearing it. So that was Podski Wee Wee for this week. I am Josh Smith.
And I'm Mike Graham. Eat 'em raw.
Eat 'em raw.
Thanks for listening. Find more great shows like this at CF Pod Network on Twitter.